Chapter 8, Meet My Perfect Family. Uncle Woody, a CHR, a friend, and a mutt. When I found out I had diabetes, I was told how to handle my eating and exercise. I was told to pay attention to my feet, my eyes, my kidneys, my heart. Almost every aspect of my life was brought up and examined, except one, the most important one, the granddaddy aspect of all Native Americans' lives. Think of what you wake up thinking about, what you go to sleep thinking about. Think of what is most important to you. It's your family. Native American families are an entity all their own. They have a personality, almost their own heartbeat. They have to be pampered, ignored, obeyed, celebrated, put up with, laughed at, and loved. At all times, they need attention. Think of these words, graduation party. Now imagine your family getting together for a graduation party. Is it like a picture found in Good Housekeeping magazine? Is there a big roast and 8 smiling faces gathered around, with father just about ready to carve? Or is your picture like mine, 100 people packed into a HUD house, and auntie needs a real fire to bake the bread that needs a special flour, or it will be worthless? Another auntie stands motionless, refusing to move until the inferior mayonnaise is thrown away, and someone drives to town to buy the best foods mayonnaise so she can make her one and only macaroni salad. There are so many characters and things going on. To say it is a party does not do it justice. It's more like a military maneuver involving a cast of thousands, taking place at several locations. There's a convoy of vehicles, boxes of supplies, huge industrial-sized aluminum pots of food. I don't think General Patton planned more than we did. In my picture of a graduation party, the word congratulations is not heard till the very end. The party starts with the words, "The fire's not built." Then, "These noodles are too soggy." When this happens, the entire batch is dramatically dumped. Some people may get nervous seeing this picture, but this is the way my family is. It can be tense, it can be moody, but it has character, and it is definitely not boring. How I really feel about my family. For me to say I care about my family is like my saying, I enjoy doing beadwork. It's a total understatement. Even the word love does not accurately describe how I feel about my family or doing beadwork. I am mad about doing beadwork. I am obsessed with beadwork. I crave beadwork. I must do beadwork. I depend on beadwork. I live and breathe beadwork. That better describes how I feel about my family, how huge an entity it is in my life, how much time, thought, and energy I give to my family. My family is woven into all moments of my life. It is the force behind almost every movement, every muscle. Its energy and influence is released with my every heartbeat. There. That's how I feel about my family. And that's why, instead of talking to you about my feet or my kidneys, I want to talk to you about my family. Uncle Woody's money-making scheme. Let's start with Uncle Woody from Arizona. As a young girl, I loved having Uncle Woody visit. He had a money-making scheme. He drove his huge black Buick from Arizona to Southern California and filled the trunk, back seat, and passenger seat with oranges floor to ceiling. When it rumbled into Bishop, we lined along the driveway, wide-eyed, as the black sedan with orange interior approached in a cloud of dust. When it came to a stop in our yard, billows of black, oily smoke rose up from the hood. Sitting there on a patch of dried grass, it looked like a huge charcoal fire with a center of brilliant orange flame. From the inside peered our Uncle Woody, sitting up straight and proud. Uncle Woody intended to make a fortune selling oranges. There was only one problem. We couldn't afford oranges, and neither could anyone else. Neighborhood kids came by, and Uncle Woody handed out the oranges one by one, setting them in the open palms of the children. There were dozens of us circling the Buick, dropping orange peels onto the ground. When the work of peeling oranges was over, we lay down on the grass, looking up at the sky, eating section after section, sweet juice dripping down our cheeks. We were orange rich. Day after day, kids would line up. Uncle Woody would conduct the orange presentation ceremony, and the level of oranges in the Buick would drop. On school days, he pushed the remaining oranges out of the way, and the younger kids climbed in. The older kids had to push the car to get it started. Uncle Woody would pop the clutch. With a bang and a lurch, a huge cloud of black smoke, the Buick sprang to life, and we were off to school, sitting up straight and proud, just like our uncle. When the oranges were gone, Uncle Woody would go back to Arizona. He never made a penny. He brought us happiness and returned to his home knowing that. He kept coming back, kept pretending he was going to make money, kept handing out free oranges, and kept driving back with a smile on his face. I was so proud to be with Uncle Woody. When that big, black, belching Buick stopped at my school, kids stared at me. Maybe they thought the car was a wreck. Maybe they were looking at me with shock. But I thought they were envious. I thought Uncle Woody was the most generous man and my personal chauffeur. How I felt about Uncle Woody is how I feel about my entire family. If strangers look at my family from the outside, it may be mysterious or even a little shocking. But strangers do not know about my family's generosity. Strangers do not know about my family's colorful nature, close to the brilliance of orange. Strangers do not know that the very same ramshackle sedan was the reason I could lay on a patch of grass with sweet juice dripping down my face and feel totally encompassed by love. How I really feel about my home. When we talk about Native families, that's where we start and what we know for sure. Uncle Woody, generosity, color, laughter, and unspoken love. There is another family member, one who once came to my door with alcohol on his breath, visiting after a long absence. I hugged him and told him how glad I was to see him. Then, with love and dug-in heels, I kept him from entering my house. I let him know that my house is a gathering place for people to laugh, or to listen, or to be quiet, even to disagree, but do it in a spirit of wellness. I feel like my home is my temple, my sacred space. With him standing on the porch and me in the doorway, I felt I had all the powers of the ceremonies at my back, a force bubbling up within my home, propping me up from behind. With the help of the ceremonies, the words came easily. This house has been blessed. I cannot let you in. It was not a judgment call, but a simple statement of fact. Having diabetes and getting older, and I hope wiser, has helped me to view my home and my own self as sacred places. It has allowed me to open the door and let in healthy people. I start with the love of healthy family members like Uncle Woody. I politely close the door to those who at the moment are not healthy. And I look for other healthy people to invite into my home. Some of those I even call family. A CHR becomes a sister. Renaming special people as family started with an amazing CHR, Arlene. She was in my living room, right at home, getting my blood sugar material set out on the table. We were talking about diabetes, about my day, about how I was doing. Suddenly, the words came out of my mouth. I wish you were my family. Arlene didn't miss a beat and said matter-of-factly, I am your family. That statement stopped me in my tracks, and I began to understand how I could build upon my own family, upon the love of family members like Uncle Woody, and to make it better by adding people like Arlene with one switch of terminology from CHR to sister. Arlene became part of my family, someone I could depend on, call when I was down and out, and show my soft, vulnerable side. A friend becomes a daughter. I tried my build a better family idea on my friend Annie. I met Annie when she was an AmeriCorps. She was dressed in a long, flowing skirt and shoes that had lower heels than toes. I summed her up, another wannabe. I figured that she would tell me she had seen Dances with Wolves over 50 times and that she had an Indian grandmother. But this is what she said to me. I come from a long line of Jewish people, but we aren't practicing. I liked her that instant. As I got to know her, I began to appreciate her sincerity and her generosity. Countless times, Annie has stopped by just to chat with me and see how I'm doing. She's helped me with my computer. She set me up to make online plane reservations. She didn't make them for me. She let me figure out how to make them myself. My relationship with Annie feels healthy. It feels like we respect each other. It feels like we are not enabling, but we are helping each other to be stronger and more independent. It feels balanced and well. Sometimes we say the words out loud. She calls me Mom. I call her Daughter. Amut becomes my life coach. There's another main character in my life who could not be left out of a discussion of my family, Muzzy. Bob and I had been praying to find a small dog. On our wedding anniversary, my sister came through the door and plopped this black and white skinny thing in my arms and said, "Happy anniversary." She was a little Heinz 57 Chihuahua mix. Muzzy liked to be smudged. Whenever Bob and I lit sage, Muzzy appeared, standing before our shins, chin slightly raised, and ready to be smudged. We had 16 years with Muzzy before she passed away. It's still hard to think she's not here. She had developed this habit of knowing when I was sad. She would jump into my lap, put her paws on my shoulder, like she was hugging me. If I was having a particularly hard day, she would lick away my tears. Muzzy taught me many lessons. She was a little thing, not more than 10 pounds. We fed her leftovers, beef and chicken and an occasional piece of pork. She gulped the meat down, but would often stop before finishing the entire bowl. Then she would point her nose at me to make a point. See? Never eat anything bigger than your head. Muzzy taught me portion control. Muzzy was brought into my life because Bob and I had prayed for her. She appeared, the perfect pet, the perfect addition to our family. Maybe that's where building a better family starts, with a request, with a prayer for someone to come into our lives. What I look for in family. I learned so many lessons from my own family members, like Uncle Woody, from my adopted family members like Arlene, Annie, and Muzzy. Uncle Woody taught me of the love and generosity that exists in my own family. It's the foundation I build on. When I'm building a better family, I look for people like Uncle Woody. Positive, can-do, generous. I look for people like Arlene. Supportive, kind, always there when you need them. I look for people like Annie. Sincere, dependable, quietly strong, and confident. And I look for people who have qualities resembling those of a 10-pound mutt. Devotion. For other family members, the ones who are stressed out about macaroni salad or not well because of alcohol or drugs, my love and patience is constant. No matter what, they will always be my family. I will not hesitate to give them a hand at a party or a hug on my doorstep. We share a past, a present, a future. They teach me how to be graceful at family graduation parties, Some teach me to stand strong at the threshold of my home and say with utmost love, you can come in when you are well. What Uncle Woody taught me. Uncle Woody was an example of the vast love found in Native American families. When we have nothing, we give it away, and it sparkles like juice in the sunlight. Uncle Woody taught me that the span of our arms is endless. We can keep opening them up and welcoming more and more, welcoming friends and neighbors, and orange for all. That is the essence of Native American families. They show us the way, set us up to see the next family member in a crowd. People like Arlene and Annie, and even little critters like Muzzy. Those who will give us support, respect, and love. People who will not be the slightest bit surprised when we meet eyes and say, you are my family. Chapter 8, Wit and Wisdom. I ask myself, what qualities do I have in my family that I cherish? What is a good way to keep myself well in my family? Do I have friends I can rename as family? How can I have healthy relationships with my adopted family?